good evening and welcome to the NFL Draft. Tonight, we officially welcome the next generation of players. So if you're ready, are you ready? Let's get it started. The NFL Draft is officially open.
Welcome inside the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. I am Trevor Sikkema. With me is Benjamin Solak on another weekend edition of our guest mock draft series. We are now officially halfway through the guest mock. Well, sort of. Not entirely, because we are doing a couple of the teams that don't have first round picks. If you didn't know that, well, now you know. But we're halfway through the first round. I'm going to recap the picks for you as we get to today's selections, which are the Las Vegas Raiders at number 17 and the Miami Dolphins at number 18. Number one, turning back the clock. We got the Jacksonville Jaguars, and they took Trevor Lawrence, of course. New York Jets, same thing. Zach Wilson at number two. Justin Fields went number three. Trey Lance went number four. Jamar Chase, number five. Kyle Pitts, number six. Jalen Waddle, seven. Penei Sewell, eight. Denver Broncos at number nine went Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah. Patrick Surtain went 10 to the Dallas Cowboys. Of course, there's no trade, so all the numbers that I just named off, it's the teams that you think are picking there. 11 with the New York Giants. They went Rayshon Slater. Eagles at 12, Devontae Smith. Los Angeles Chargers went Christian Darrisaw at 13. Minnesota Vikings, Quiddy Pay at 14. New England Patriots, Mark Schofield. He took J.C. Horn in the corner from South Carolina. And then the final pick that we heard was Alex Clancy for the Arizona Cardinals taking Caleb Farley. That puts the Las Vegas Raiders at number 17 on the board. Oh, Ben, it's always dangerous to go into the mind of John Gruden. But We've got the right guest to do it. I don't know, man. What do you even think the Raiders are? They dismantled their whole offensive line. Are they going to pick offensive line in the first round?
Yeah, and I know since we recorded this show, and we're recording the intro after the show, they've cut Mo Hurst and they've cut Arden Key.
Right.
They said, hey, you know what we did to our offensive line? That was fun. Let's do it to our defense, which is not like Arden Key was a big contributor, but Mo Hurst's a pretty doggone good player. This team is in such desperate need for help on defense. They basically just need, I think, a blue chip player. And at 17, it's tough to get that guy. I'm interested to see where Q goes with that. And then the second pick with Miami, this is our first repeat pick, which is always fun because you get a little bit of a retrospective look back on what happened at six. You get to talk a little bit about how the needs have changed relative to A, when we talked to the first guy, and B, with the board falling the way that it is. It's nice to get that second perspective on a team. So this is a very fun episode. It's a team that's way, way, way on the up in terms of drafting, the Dolphins, and then a team that's a little bit on the opposite side of the coin.
So we're starting this episode out with some events happening in Sin City. Las Vegas, baby. We're talking about the Raiders. And to help us understand everything that's going on with the Raiders, because you know that anytime it's a John Gruden team, we need some help. We need some reinforcements. We got to understand what's going on with John Gruden. We have got a man who, to Raiders Nation, he's built a brand just by one letter. They know him as Q. He's the host of Locked On Raiders. Does an incredible job covering that team inside and out. Q, thank you so much for joining us, man.
Yeah, no problem, man. I always enjoy jumping on with you guys. You guys do a great job. So, yeah, man, let's talk some Raiders. I love it.
All right, here we go. So, first question. Man, what are they doing? Like, what? I don't understand. I was told that football, it starts up front. It starts in the offensive trenches. I thought the Raiders had a good offensive line, and then all of a sudden they just decided, nah, we're going to switch it up. That's too easy. Let's totally rework the offensive line. Gabe Jackson's gone. Rodney Hudson's gone. Trent Brown's gone. And my question to you is just, how expected was this? Were you as caught off guard by these moves as everybody else seemed to be outside of Raiders Nation? Because it looked like the Raiders had a good thing going with their offensive line, and it was a strength of their team. And now all of a sudden, we're kind of in the middle of the offseason thinking, man, this might be now a big need for them when it comes to the NFL draft.
I was caught off guard by Rodney Hudson. I'm not going to lie to you. I didn't think that the All-Pro center, who's one of the best centers in the league, was going to be shipped off. But, you know, they made that decision. He's now in Arizona. They eventually traded him for a third-round pick, so at least they got something for him, because originally it was looked like they were just going to release him.
Right.
And I was like, wait a minute, hold on. This dude is way too good just to release him. So they ended up trading him. So that worked out. Just at least they got a third-round pick out of it. Gabe Jackson, I actually thought that he was a guy that would have been released a year ago. Once he got injured in 2019, and they were able to fill in that void and really didn't miss a beat with him being out for quite a while in 2019. I thought, okay, well, he's making a lot of money. And of course, you all know that the league is one of those where they're trying to find your younger replacement all the time. So I thought, okay, but he's going to be on his way out, but they kept him around for another year. So seeing him on his way out didn't shock me at all. They were able to get a fifth round pick out of Seattle for him. So that kind of salvaged that as well. I actually thought that that was not too bad. And then Trent Brown, I mean, he's a man, great player. Great player when he's out there available. Problem is that he's not out there available enough. I mean, 32 games he could have played with the Raiders. He played 16. That's it. He played the equivalent of one total season with the Raiders, and he was there 2 years. So, I mean, he's just not available enough. He's not really motivated. It doesn't seem like, at least, that he was motivated to put his best effort out there with the Silver and Black. It looked like he needs a team that has more like structure as far as staying on top of you and making sure that you're doing what you're supposed to do instead of more self-discipline. He seems like one of those guys that just needs to be, you know, you guys, someone's got to hover over him. And I think that's why he has his best years when he's a member of the New England Patriots, which is who he's a member of the that's the team he's on now. So I think that he'll be fine in New England, but I think Las Vegas was probably a little too loose for him. He needs a little bit more structure.
From a large scale perspective, Q, the debate before the offensive line moves was how much capital the Raiders have invested on offense as opposed to how much they've invested on defense, where they were spending these money. And they obviously were very offensive heavy draft last year. Mike Mayock basically came out with a quote and said, like, you know, we know that we've got to improve on defense. We have to spend some money and we have to spend some time here. And obviously they make some acquisitions. You bring in Solly Thomas, you bring in Yannick Ngakoue, and they made some signings this year, made signings last year at linebacker with Nick Kwiatkowski and Corey Littleton. But they have not been able to hit on a first-round draft pick on defense, man. Cleveland Furl, John Abram, Damon Arnett, who I think Arnett's going to be good, but it was banged up last year. They just have struggled here. And so you sitting where you are at 17, now with the offensive line moves considered, to me, this for a long time felt like, all right, this is going to be defense no matter what. And now all of a sudden I start looking at the guard board and the tackle board and going, this made some reasonable picks here. Does this have to be defense? Is the depth chart that bad? Is Gus Bradley a new DC? You got to get new body types, new blood in there for him. Or is this going to be a conversation for another investment in the offense?
I mean, I think that the conversations are wide open. You know, I really do. Like you mentioned, the offensive line sitting at 17. I think the conversation when it gets to him, I mean, obviously you got to see how the board plays out. But I think the conversation is going to be offensive tackle or linebacker or safety, you know, or, you know, even if they try to trade back and maybe get a safety. I mean, they need defensive pieces. I'll tell you like this. By the time they come out of the draft, they need to come out with at least one tackle, probably a guard as well for depth. And then also they're going to need to come out with a safety, preferably a big time safety, a guy who could turn the ball over, create turnovers. And I would say a corner. And I mean, a linebacker is not the biggest need, but it's also not a bad pick if you go get one, because right now I look at the Raiders defense in particular, and you guys know football like the back of your hands, man. You need some alpha dogs, right? I look at the Raiders and I look at their defense and I say, who's the alpha dog? Who's the difference maker? Who's the guy that opposing offensive coordinators say, okay, let's make sure we scheme away from that guy? Who is that on the Raiders? I don't see that guy right now, you know? So I think that the Raiders need to go in there and make a decision to go get a big time leader, a big time alpha dog. You mentioned Damon Arnett. I like him. He's gritty. He's a tough guy. You know, he's got a little edge to him. He's got a little, you know, something in his neck or whatever you want to describe it. But like you said, if you can't stay on the field, what good are you? So he wasn't on the field enough in 2020, his rookie year. It was concussions. It was wrist injuries. It was COVID. I mean, you name it, he had it. So,
right,
you know, if he can figure out how to stay on the field and figure out what Gus Bradley wants him to do as a defensive coordinator, he probably could be a really good one. But again, if you're not on the field, nobody will ever know. And that kind of goes on the back end with Jonathan Abram as well. I mean, he's literally played, I think, 12 games in two seasons. It's not enough. You know what I mean? So he's got to figure out how to stay on the field. And when he's on the field, do what he's supposed to be doing and not out there freelancing or looking like a deer in headlights like he did a lot in 2020. But I think a lot of that had to do with Paul Gunther's defensive scheme as well. So I'm hoping that Gus Bradley sees the tools that he has right now in the cupboard and says, okay, this is how this guy works. This is how this guy works. And this is how this guy works. Now I need to go get that guy and that guy to complete the mission and complete the team and really be able to have a fighting chance. So at 17, man, I think sky's the limit. I think it's wide open, you know, and conventional wisdom tells you, like you mentioned at the beginning of the show, you build up your trenches, the offensive line, the defensive line. So conventional wisdom tells you go and get, you know, the best offensive tackle, but it also says, hey, this is a very deep tackle draft. So
right.
If you want to go and get a big time safety or a big time linebacker, if he happens to be available there, then go ahead and do it, because you could double down and get an offensive tackle maybe in the second round.
Is there a lot of talk of safety? You know, you're bringing up safety a lot, and I just haven't heard safety a ton for the right. Now, not that, you know, you can't pick up one in the mid rounds, but you seem to be talking like safety should be on the board for them round one, round two with some of their early picks. Are they talking about that?
Oh, yeah. That's a priority, man. That's a priority. They have Jonathan Abram in the back end. He's a strong safety. He's a guy who should go play up in the box. That's kind of his thing. And in Gus Bradley, it's like, it's so funny, man. It's been fun being able to talk about the defense in the offseason with Gus Bradley now, because he comes from Seattle. I mean, that's where he really made his name, was in Seattle with the Legion of Boom. So everyone says, all right, you've got a potential Cam Chancellor and Jonathan Abram. And I know Cam Chancellor is a heck of a player, so you don't want to just put that name on anybody. But sure. Now you got to go find his Earl Thomas. Who's going to be his Earl Thomas? The Raiders have Jeff Heath. Jeff Heath is a good player, but he's not a great player. He's a good player. He makes plays. He's around the ball, but he's not a guy that I'm just going to trot out there and say, hey, this is going to be the guy who's going to save all the issues or erase all the issues I may have on the back end. So they need a big time free safety. And the Raiders, if you go back and look, they have not been a team that's been able to create turnovers in a long time. And the last time they went to the playoffs was 2016. They created a bunch of turnovers. They don't force turnovers. They just don't. I think they may have forced, 15 of them in 2020, if that number's correct. I mean, just not enough, you know? And so they need a guy on the back end who could play that free safety position, who could be the eraser on the back end, who could go create some turnovers. I mean, I'm looking at a guy like Javon Holland. I'm looking at a guy like Richie Grant. I'm looking at maybe later in the draft, a guy like Andre Sisco. If you go early in the draft, maybe a Trayvon Merrick from TCU. I mean, there's dudes that are available that the Raiders should be looking at and say, hey, we've got to prioritize one of these guys. The question is going to be, is it going to be in the first round or the second round? I don't think that they get out of the second round without having a safety on the roster.
I want you to help me calibrate expectations for the wide receiver room, because last year we signed Tyrell Williams and we signed Nelson Agholor and we drafted Lynn Bowden and we drafted Brian Edwards and we drafted Henry Ruggs. And now Tyrell's gone, Aguilar's gone. We traded away Lynn Bowden immediately. And we've signed John Brown. And we have now these two rookies, Edwards and Ruggs, the first and the third round picks, along with Hunter Renfrow, who's just going to be here forever and is going to be good forever. It's going to be just like Clemson. He's never going to leave. How much can we get out of Ruggs? We sent 11 overall. He was the top receiver selected. We took him above Judy, above CeeDee Lamb. Are they going to be able to get a three-level threat out of him? Or does the signing of John Brown indicate Brown's going to be our field stretcher and we're going to let Ruggs be more of a complete receiver? They loved Brian Edwards last year, talked him up all the time during camp, and then he dealt with injury. He didn't get a ton of looks when he was out there. I want to know who's getting the targets. Where are they lining up? This was a tough room to figure out last year. I feel like it's tough again this year. What do you expect come regular season?
Well, I mean, the biggest issue is that Darren Waller is target number one, you know, and I know he's a tight end, but he's target number one, no doubt about it. He's the guy that's going to go over 1,000 yards. He's Derek Carr's favorite target. He's going to get, you know, triple digit targets every year. So you have to realize that that's going to be part of the equation. But I'm with you. I mean, Henry Ruggs, first wide receiver taken off the board, like you mentioned, only had 26 catches in 2020. He's a guy that you have to figure out, okay, if you went and got this guy as the first wide receiver because he's the fastest dude in the draft, well, then use that speed to your advantage. Go back and see what he did at Alabama. See the crossing pattern. See the way that they got him. They got him the jet sweeps, the way that they smoked the ball to him on wide receiver screens. I mean, just any way you could feed him the ball, get it to him. It's not necessarily always go routes and post routes and skinny posts. It's not always that way. I mean, he didn't even really do that a lot at Alabama. Don't let him just turn into a deep threat. So I think John Gruden, I think Derek Carr, and I think Henry Ruggs all need to get in the same room and figure out how to get on the same page. I think a lot of the disconnect in 2020 had to do with all three of them. I think that Henry Ruggs wasn't quite defined enough to be a NFL wide receiver and a big time threat outside of his speed. So I think that he needs to get stronger. I think his route running needs to get a little bit better, a better understanding of where he needs to be to accept the ball in from Derek Carr, who's a guy who doesn't want to turn the ball over. He's not going to put the ball in harm's way. So if he doesn't trust you, most likely he's not going to throw it to you. So again, you get 26 catches in a year when you're the number one wide receiver taken off the board, which is just not enough, you know? So I think that I've seen him working out with Carr in the park in Vegas. And so that's cool. It seems like they're trying to get on the same page early, which is always a good thing. You know, who knows if they'll show up to mandatory, not mandatory, but voluntary camp that starts on Monday. I mean, right. A lot of the league is deciding what they're going to do right now, but it'd be nice to see him get on the same page with Carr early, you know, get that chemistry going and show what he can do. And then John Gruden maybe could unleash him a little bit and use him a little bit more. Hunter Renfro, like you mentioned, man, he's going to be the constant, man. They call him third in Renfro for a reason. You know, he's that guy that's going to find a hole in his own. He's going to sit down and make himself available. I mean, he's just, that's who he is. I'm good with that. Brian Edwards is a great question. Big guy, violent runner, you know, very strong. He could really be a dude, man, if he gets out there. But his issues at South Carolina, staying healthy. His issues in the NFL so far, staying healthy. So, I mean, you know, Tigers don't really change their stripes. So that's one of those guys where it's like, yeah, it could be a boom or a bust. It could be a great pick if it works out. But given his history, you probably feel like he's not going to be a guy who's going to be available all the time. But, man, big, strong hands. He had one touchdown catch his rookie year, and it was a great hands catch. I mean, just all straight hands, like vice grips, you know, just reach out there and just snatch that out of the air. I mean, that's what you want to see from your wide receiver. He's just got to be out there more to make that happen. You know, they brought in John Brown. I'm not very high on that pick. I think it's okay. I mean, that's fine. It's a 1-year deal. Maybe they get a little bit of love like they got with Nelly a year ago. And all of a sudden he has a big time season, but he gets banged up quite a bit. Willie Snead, I like him a little bit more than John Brown. You know, they bring him in. He's a guy that at least is going to go up and fight for the 50-50 balls and kind of has a little bit of edge to him. And if you go back to his days in New Orleans, actually had some pretty good production. You know, he was really a really good wide receiver. Now he went to Baltimore, and well, we all know in Baltimore, wide receivers aren't the number one target. So, you know, it's one of those scenarios. It's a packed room, but I'll tell you straight up, just because there's a lot of names in there, I don't think that if there's a big time wide receiver that were to fall to the Raiders in the draft, I would not fault them for going and getting them and just saying, hey, you know what, we got to continue to improve this room and get right. The best guys in this room and be out there and competing, because you're going up against the Chiefs twice a year.
Right. I got to ask you about Mike Mayock, because we're going into year three of Mayock being the general manager. And, you know, Gruden obviously signs the massive deal a year before they bring in Mayock, and it's a 10-year deal for Gruden, so you figure that he's probably not going anywhere. But when you look at the 2019 season, the 2019 draft, 2020 season, 2020 draft, I mean, the team was 7-9 Mayock's first year as general manager. Okay, 8-8 the next year for last season, so a game better. The point differential got a little bit better, but I feel like there's still been a ton of juggling of the roster. It just feels like over the last 2 years, the Raiders have been moving pieces constantly, and where that's not always the sign of not a job well done or chaos, or it's just nice to find core players that you could build your team around, right? And it just feels like since Mayock has gotten there and going into his third year as general manager, the Raiders don't have as many of those guys as you would probably hope. And so my question to you is this, like, they've steadily, like, just a little bit kind of improved from year to year with him as general manager, but how hot is this seat? Give me the pulse of what Raiders Nation and what you guys are thinking of Mike Mayock as general manager right now. Is it like, hey, if the Raiders have a 5-11 year, Mayock's probably gone? Or do you think that people really think that, all right, they're much closer to that 9 or 10 win potential playoff berth than looking to move on from him?
You know, it's a tough question to answer, because when you look at the dynamic between John Gruden and Mike Mayock, you know that it starts and ends with John Gruden. You know, I know Mike Mayock is the GM by name, but we all know that it all starts and it all ends with John Gruden. So I think that they get into the office. I think that they have some very spirited conversations. I think Mike Mayock presents his case for why they should go and bring in certain players. And I think John Gruden presents his case why they should bring in other players. And then he overrules Mike Mayock, or he has the eventual say. You know, he's the guy who says, okay, well, this is what we're going to do. I always think, outside of a couple coaches in the league that I think have earned the rights, I always feel like it's tough, man, when the head coach is also the guy that's basically in charge of player personnel, you know, because that's a lot on a guy's plate to do. And John Gruden, over the years, the head coach, has proven that he could be a good quality head coach in the league. John Gruden, the player personnel guy, the guy that's making all the picks, hasn't proven to be that guy. I mean, you can go back to his days at Tampa Bay. You can go back early, you know, before Mike Mayock joined the Raiders, even 2018 when Gruden returned and it was Reggie McKenzie there. It's just, you know, it's kind of like Gruden, the GM, is probably hurting Gruden, the head coach right now. Sure. You know, so yeah. I feel like that there's a tough dynamic there. With all that being said, and you mentioned the hot seat for Mike Mayock, if it doesn't go as planned for the Raiders, I do think Mike Mayock will be the first fall guy. I don't think it's necessarily 100% his fault, but I think that he'll be the fall guy because John Gruden's not going to say, hey, you know what? Mayock was right. All those players that he wanted me to bring in would have been good guys. I overruled them.
He'll never say that.
On me and not on Mayock. He's going to take that one and say, well, we got to go in another direction. Sorry, Mike, I love you, but this is what's got to happen. Just like, I mean, he fired Paul Gunther midseason last year, and Paul Gunther, bad defensive coordinator for the Raiders. He wasn't a good fit. Didn't do what the, you know, he needed him to do. And he held on to him probably a little bit too long because he was his buddy. But you knew that Gruden wasn't going to get the guy, wasn't going to get the axe. So somebody had to. So boom, there goes Paul Gunther. So now who's the next fall guy? Probably it'll be Mike Mayock. And that's unfortunate because I think that he's a really good GM. I think that's what I mean. We don't know because again, we don't know the dynamic and how it all goes down in the conference room or the practice facility or whatever, you know, their offices when they're negotiating on who they want to bring in. But I just feel like that he has a good mind about himself. And it's just, is John Gruden going to allow him to let that good knowledge of these college players really shine?
All right, Q, I'd like to put you on the clock here then. Wide receiver could be a spot. Offensive line got decimated. The whole defense needs help. Las Vegas is in a weird spot. As the board fell to you, we're starting the back half of the first round here. So the final last couple of consensus round one players on the board, who is it that you'd like to see in the silver and black come the end of April?
Well, I was looking hard at offensive tackle Christian Darrisaw from Virginia Tech, but he fell off the board a little bit before the Raiders were able to get on the clock. So with that being said, with the way that the board has fallen and shaken out, I'm going to roll with Micah Parsons, the linebacker out of Penn
State. All right,
here
we go.
And that's not a consolation prize. I mean, that's a really, really good player. That's a guy who could help take out Travis Kelce, cover him, from wherever he lines up. I mean, he's just an alpha dog anyway. But Parsons is kind of fits that mold on that guy that I said that could be a difference maker for the Raiders defense. And whenever Gus Bradley has had a really good D, he's had a big time linebacker at all times. He's had a big time linebacker that can go out there and make plays. Parsons could do just that. You look at the AFC West, like I mentioned, Kelce, you got Noah Fant, you got running backs like Clyde Edwards-Helaire going to come out the backfield. Parsons could do all that and then some. He's a guy that can go sideline to sideline. I just think that it's about time that the Raiders invest early in a linebacker and a big time one, like I said, that could be an alpha dog, could be a leader of that defense and really help give a little bit of edge to the Raiders and what they need in 2020, or 2021, help improve that defense and give Gus Bradley another toy. So Micah Parsons out of Penn State is the pick at 17 for the Raiders.
There we go. Real quick, I just got a follow up for you because we didn't emphasize edge rusher, and I feel like edge rusher is definitely a need for the Raiders, but you know, they brought in Yannick Ngakoue, so that probably means they don't have to go one in the first round, is a big reason why Parsons is very alluring to the Raiders, because he's got that former edge background. Like, do you see that as, hey, this isn't just a middle linebacker for us, this guy can be a do-it-all player?
Yeah, absolutely. That's it, 100%. I mean, he's a guy that could just make plays all over the field. And the Raiders, that's what they ultimately need, more playmakers, guys that could just do anything that they need to, anything that they're asked to do. And I think Parsons could absolutely be that guy.
All right, there we go. Everybody, please go follow Q on Twitter, your boy Q254. He does a great job covering the Raiders and just football in general, man. I mean, you could tell the passion in his voice for the game when he talks and when he gives us all the insight that he's given us here on this podcast. We got Micah Parsons off the board at 17 to the Las Vegas Raiders. Q, thank you so much for joining us, man.
Absolutely appreciate it, man. Keep up the great work.
All right, so Penn State linebacker Micah Parsons goes off right here, number 17 to the Las Vegas Raiders. We will have pick number 18. Cam Wolf is with us to pick once again for the Miami Dolphins coming up after the break. Bet Online is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all of your sports action. Football might be over, but the NBA, the MLB, the NHL, all that, it's still in full swing. Bet Online even covers those TV shows, the reality TV, the award shows, anything that you want to binge and anything that you're interested in, basically whatever you want to put your money on. BetOnline's got you. It's the best and easiest way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head over to the website today or use your mobile device to sign up for a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit using the promo code LOCKEDON. All caps, one word, locked on. BetOnline, your online sports book experts. Get all the sports news that you need in just under 20 minutes with the Locked On Today podcast. Host Peter Bukowski updates you on the latest news in every major sport with the help of our local experts. Follow the Locked On Today podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. On to pick number 18. It is a familiar face. It is the Miami Dolphins. This is their second selection in the first round, and that's not uncommon of Miami either, because it feels like they're a team that's got multiple first-round picks. They had it last year. They've got it this year. They've got it next year. It just feels like Miami is all about the draft. That's why we love talking about the Dolphins. Chris Greer, big draft guy, but we don't have Chris Greer on this show. We have... I was going to say the next best thing, but you know what? I'm just going to give him the compliment and say it's even better than Chris Greer. It's somebody who knows even more than Chris Greer is. I don't know. He's probably smiling a little bit about that, but it's our good friend Cameron Wolf. He covers the Miami Dolphins for ESPN. Cameron, how you doing, my friend?
I'm good. I'll just take Chris Greer's paycheck. That's the only thing
sure.
I'll ask.
Yeah, I mean, why not? Why, you know,
he
like,
takes the flack for the picks. I take the money for the picks. Don't worry, that's fine.
That actually seems like a John Gruden setup, like we just talked about with the Raiders. You know, Mike Mayock takes the flag, Gruden cashes the check. So, right. Cam, I gotta ask you, and we'll get into a little bit of number six. We had Kyle Krabs on to give us the insight on the first pick, and so we'll talk a little bit about that as we give some context to what might happen here at 18. But first, I realized that we didn't ask Kyle just straight up about Tua's roller coaster kind of a year. And I want to focus on Tua specifically. And I'd love to know your thoughts of what happened when the pick went down, when Tua's name was announced, how he was in the early parts in the season, like training camp, the switch to him in the middle of the year, right when it looked like they were turning things around with Fitzpatrick, and then ultimately what you thought of him in his rookie season.
Yeah. I think this whole year has been an interesting contrast because I believe that draft, every Dolphins fan in the world wanted Tua and hated Justin Herbert. That was the overall consensus from Dolphins fans. I'd say at least 80 to 90% of them. And now looking at this offseason, it seemed like almost everybody wanted to get rid of Tua. So it's been a complete switch. Which has been interesting to see. And, you know, I think he went from, hey, this guy's the second coming of Dan Marino to this guy is, you know, he'll be lucky if he's Jay Field. And I think like most things, the contrast for both sides were too wide. I think that, you know, I'm not a big make excuses for quarterbacks guys. So like, we all know the scenarios. He was coming off injuries, you know, he didn't have much of an offseason. Beyond all of that, I don't think he was that bad last year. I think that the reason why we're looking at Tua and saying and having all these questions is because Justin Herbert had a phenomenal rookie season, probably one of the best rookie seasons that any quarterback's had in recent memory. And then you have the rare situation where Deshaun Watson and Russell Wilson both have names popped up as in trade situations. So you have three different situations that look better than the one you have. And that's often the comparison thing, right? And people, you know, you feel bad about your situation because, hey, we could have had Justin Herbert, or maybe we can trade Tua for Deshaun. And now all those things don't happen, and people are a little bit disappointed. So I guess my overall view is I thought Tua had an up and down year. I thought that his highs, to me, showed reason why I still believe he can be the franchise quarterback in Miami. I look back at that Arizona game where he out-dueled Kyler Murray in Arizona and threw for nearly 300 yards. I still remember a play where I think he juked Buda Baker on like a third and four run where he just kind of knocked him out of his shoes. And I'm like, oh man, this guy's back, you know? And I think that was his second start, you know, it's coming right off the Rams game. And he looked really, really good. And I remember those highs. And a lot of that game, they were playing a lot of up-tempo offense. They were doing a lot of empty sets and doing stuff where he looked very comfortable. And for me, I anticipate Tua having a better year too, mostly because of comfort. And you know, I think I learned a little bit more about Tua as a quarterback. I maybe thought going into the draft process, he was a little bit more of a playmaker, a guy who can, you know, perform outside of scheme than he sort of has shown so far. So I sort of had to recalibrate my expectations, but I still believe even if he isn't that superstar outside of scheme, if you really focus on him, what his skill set is accuracy and being able to command an offense. I still think those things he can excel at. And for me, they've started the process to build around them. You know, they brought in Will Fuller. If he can stay healthy, he'll give them a deep threat that they really needed. You know, Preston Williams, Devontae Parker, Mike Gesicki are all really good receivers, but they're jump ball receivers at their best. And I think that's probably the biggest thing that Tua struggled with is throwing guys open. You know, where it fits, he's the complete opposite. He loves to throw that jump ball, you know, 50-50 ball down the field. And Tua really was hesitant in that. So I'm not sure if that's something he can learn or if the Dolphins just need to adjust their personnel to where not everybody on their starting lineup is a jump ball receiver. So I think that kind of goes into a lot of what we're going to talk about with the draft is I think they're going to end up drafting that playmaker. I know we have Kyle Pitts off the board. He would be a really good fit for them as a guy who can separate and get open. You know, Will Fuller, I think all those things are going to open up lanes for him. So I'm not down on Tua. I think he does need to be better, but I've seen enough to feel like, hey, he deserves more than 9 games. And I'm optimistic on what year two with the new OC set up and more playmakers around him can do for him.
Yeah, I like that idea that, like, you know, Tua had a rookie quarterback season. It was a rookie quarterback being a rookie. It's just that other rookie had a really, really, really record-setting rookie season, and that kind of thing makes things trickier. But, I thought Tua was as billed. And so this change on offense that you alluded to, I think, is right. Like, they've got jump ball guys. They need to add different body types, different skill sets. When they traded up from 12 to 6 after the trade back, it was because – as most thought, they clearly have a weapon in mind that they want to get for this team, for this quarterback. And so Kyle Crabbs earlier made the pick of Kyle Pitts and Jamar Chase, who's more of a jump ball guy, is in the conversation as well. Do you think it is Pitts that they're targeting at 6, or is there another name that comes to mind for you? And if it even is Pitts, do they still have work to do to add more of a traditional slot receiver to continue to add to this room, or is the addition of Pitts and the addition of Will Fuller enough?
Yeah, so I believe they traded back from 3 to 12 and back up to 6 because they had a group of maybe 3 to 5 guys that they felt comfortable with the drafting, and they didn't want to miss them. So for me, I don't believe they have one guy that's far and beyond above them. You know, I saw Mel Kiper's draft, and I don't like to say anything about our colleagues or anything, but it would be really shocking to me if they traded back up before for Kyle Pitts, because they just were there at 3. If they really wanted Kyle Pitts, you stay at 3 and draft Kyle Pitts. You know, so clearly to me, trading back meant that, hey, we don't love somebody, one of these receivers, enough to take them over everyone else. So I believe that, you know, kind of my educated guess is that group includes Kyle Pitts, Jamar Chase, and I know people are down on him because he's thin, but Devontae Smith as well. And I think I would be surprised if any of those three guys end up in Miami, you know, and I know Dolphins fans will hate it, but I think Penei Sewell is probably still in that group as well. So I'd say one of those four guys ends up in Miami. I mean, Pitts and Jamar Chase, I think most people would say are 1A and 1B as far as the top playmakers in the draft. But when we talk about skill sets and what fits for Tua, we talked about guys who can separate and be, you know, create plays in the open field. I don't know if anybody in this draft does that, you know, especially at the top of the draft, does that better and smoother than Devontae Smith. So I think it may be foolish to dismiss him as a possibility. Not saying that he's going to be the guy, but I still wouldn't rule him out as much as we talk about Pitts and Chase at the top.
I know we're going to talk about defense plenty with this pick here at number 18, but there's another position that seems to get a lot of hype from Miami Dolphins fans, and that is running back. And it is an interesting topic anytime you bring up running backs with the first round, let alone in the top 20. So they're sitting here 2 picks before that edge in the top 20 at number 18. Is a running back on the board? Because Miami also picks early in the second round as well. So, like, they have plenty of ammunition to pick up a running back if they wanted to wait a little bit. I've seen some Miami Dolphins fans think, no, you don't spend at number 18 overall on a running back. You can wait for the beginning of the second round. And I've seen other ones say, go get Najee Harris, because Najee Harris, at least that's the name that I see most, might not make it to where they're picking in the early second round. So when you look at this selection, I'll kind of have you put on a Dolphins draft hat, if you will. Is running back really in the conversation for them here at number 18?
I think it's certainly in the conversation. I think that the one running back that they would take or consider taking in the first round is Najee Harris. I think the question, and I wrote a story about this last week, is you have to decide positional value and whether or not you want to make that jump there at 18, because I think Najee Harris will be there at 18, or you wait till 36 and get whatever's left. And I believe, and I'm going to, you know, kind of reveal our mock draft pick in a little bit, but I believe they end up waiting. I don't think it's a bad decision if they go Najee Harris. I think he would be a really good fit in their scheme. They want to run a lot of zone. Najee Harris is a complete back. He isn't just that one dimensional back.
Sure.
You know, he can catch out of the backfield. He's got power. So I think he's a great fit in this offense. But do you get the same value with him as you may get with some of the pass rushers that are going to be probably available there at 18? I think that's the biggest question. And for me, I think there's a couple first-round pass rushers that are probably going to be there at 18. And if they're similar grades, then you take the pass rusher over the running back. And you hope at 36, you know, I would love to see a guy like Javonte Williams there for them. And I think that, you know, picking pass rusher at 18 and Javonte Williams at 36 right. is better than the alternative of the flip, you know, taking Najee Harris at 18 and then pass rusher at 36.
So I want to ask you about pass rusher, because when I mock, and I'm doing it for all 32 teams, I always hesitate when I start thinking about edge rushers for Miami. So last year during the free agent spending spree, we brought in Emmanuel Ogba. We brought in Shaq Lawson, right? And they were these big five tech, heavy handed, can maybe be interior guys. They drafted Jason Strobridge. They brought in Ledbetter, right? Like these are all the same mold of dudes, big hand in the dirt players. The one guy they really spent on, who was more so of an outside linebacker rusher type, was Kyle Van Noy.
Yes.
And now Kyle Van Noy is not here anymore. And a lot of that has to do with Andrew Van Ginkle, who played quite well for them. But no more Shaq Lawson, no more Kyle Van Noy. Ogba had, I think, a really pleasantly surprising season last year, liked what he put out on film. What body type do they need? What role do they need? Are they going to continue to bring in these big, heavy-handed, can play all three down, be strong in the running game guys? I think they've needed more speed off the edge since last season. Are they going to prioritize that? Do they not really care about that? What mold do you think they're going after here?
I think that's very interesting, because like they preach this versatile scheme all the time. You hear them talk about versatile, being able to do multiple things. But for me, versatility is only important if guys are good at that thing.
We say on this podcast all the time that if your best trait as a prospect is versatility, you must not be a very good prospect, right? You gotta be good at something.
Yeah,
exactly. So that being said, I don't think you'll ever see the Dolphins draft a one-dimensional prospect high in the draft. That's just not what they believe in. I think if they're drafting a pass rusher, they're going to have to believe that he can at least hold up in the run. So I think that the body type thing is an interesting debate, because it's what they value most. And this is a team that I've learned values coverage more than they value pass rush. So they've spent all this money on Xavier Howard and Byron Jones, and they haven't put as much resources as edge rusher, which is why we see it as a clear need. So do they value pass rusher as a position to draft in the first round? I think they should, and the league values it, but I'm not sure. I'm not certain that the Dolphins do. So that might be the situation where Najee Harris kind of slides in if they don't simply value the position. But I think that, you know, if you're looking at what they're missing, to me, they're missing a guy who can win one-on-one. And that's the biggest flaw in this defense. You know, Emmanuel Ogba had a really, really good year, and he won sometimes, but they need another one-on-one guy who can win, whether it's speed or power. And I don't care if that's a 280-pound guy or a 250-pound guy. They have holes in both areas. So whether he's, you know, they're playing a lot more 3-4 last year. If he's a 3-4 outside linebacker, they need two of those guys. So even if you're having, you know, Andrew Van Ginkle as one of your outside guys and having Emmanuel Ogba on the line, then you're going to need the other. And if you're still going to have to fill the Shaq Lawson spot down on the line as well. So I think they have really room to add two front seven guys, two starting caliber front seven guys. So it's really whichever prospect they like better for me rather than body type. I could see them getting a 275-pound guy or a 250-pound guy. So
we've talked about offensive line before for the Dolphins. And, you know, you brought up Penei Sewell's name as potentially being on the board for them at number six if he happens to be there and they would consider it. We don't really talk about offensive line for the Dolphins here at 18. It's almost like, oh, you know, if Penei Sewell is there, then you go and you get the upgrade. And is that just kind of where the conversation is right now? Are the Dolphins at the place where, unless they're taking a top-tier guy like Penei Sewell at the top, who is an immediate upgrade no matter what and probably could be for any team, Are they comfortable rolling with the offensive line they have right now, or do we think that offensive line might be more in the conversation here for 18 than we're really giving it credit for?
Yeah, I think at least in my view, they have talked about development a lot, you know, with Tua, with these offensive linemen. And you remember last year they drafted Austin Jackson in the first round, Robert Hunt in the second round, Solomon Kinley in the fourth round. And all three of those guys started at least half the season. So, you know, they had up and down results. None of them like looked great, but ideally they want at least two of those guys and maybe all three to become starters. So I think that's why you may not see it as much, you know, in at 18 or 36, as far as like an offensive lineman, because if you're drafting a guy that's still going to need development and still going to need them, you're just adding another developmental piece. Whereas Penei Sewell, I think we'd all agree, is going to come in and be your, you know, day one guy, and you think he's going to be pretty strong from day one. So, I mean, I wouldn't rule it out. I mean, a guy like Elijah Vera Tucker, I've seen him mock to Miami a few times. And, you know, I guess it would make sense if you're not sold on Solomon Kinley. I think Vera Tucker's probably a guard, so you're still keeping Robert Hunt at right tackle and Austin Jackson at left tackle. So it just means you're upgrading that right guard spot. And maybe it's a long-term play. I don't think Eric Flowers is here beyond this year. So maybe you're thinking, hey, you know, this guy and Solomon Kinley are going to be our starting guards for the future. So I wouldn't rule it out. But for me, I think Penei Sewell is a best player available situation where, hey, offensive tackle isn't our biggest need. But if we feel like this is going to solidify our offensive line and he's better than what we feel like is on the board, then we'll take that jump. I wouldn't love it, but I can't rule it out because of that reason.
Looking at off-ball linebacker, I would try to think of positions that we often see selected at 18. It's not probably going to be a spot here with both Michael Parsons and Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah already off the board, but the Dolphins have Jerome Baker, who a good player, fine player you like, and then they make the trade for Bernardrick McKinney. And when they made the trade, I remember thinking, like, I'm fine with this so long as it doesn't stop them from also improving linebacker in the draft if it falls to them. And it hasn't fallen to them here. But
right.
Is this off-ball linebacker room enough for you and what you think they think in the building for them to say, you know, we can go later, maybe you have a day three guy, whatever, or is it still in need of improvement? Because we know that the one big difference really between this Miami defense and the Patriots defense that it tried to emulate is that it didn't really have that thumper in the middle with a lot of success. So is that still a big need for this team, even with the acquisition of McKinney?
Yeah, I definitely think it is. I mean, okay. I think it's just how much they're going to put value into that position, right? Because if you look at it as, hey, Bernardrick McKinney is going to take Kyle Van Noy's inside linebacker reps and Andrew Van Ginkle is going to take Kyle Van Noy's outside linebacker reps, and that's how you're going to solidify it, then you still need somebody behind them because they lost Kamu Grugerhill, because they lost one of the other backup linebackers. I can't think of his name right now. And Landon Roberts is coming back, but he's coming off a serious knee injury, so you don't know how much you're going to get out of him. I still think you need that long-term development depth. They're going to have to decide soon if they're going to pay Jerome Baker. So for me, I'd love to see them somewhere, you know, maybe in day two, get a guy like a Chaz Surratt or like a Baron Browning or, you know, one of the Jabril Cox, one of those guys who are more of an athletic guy who may not be a year one guy who's going to, you know, light it up, but, you know, year two, year three down the line is going to slide in and be a starter. I think those type guys would make sense for them, you know, whether it's late round two or, you know, early round three, whatever. I don't know if it's a round one option. I mean, you know, Micah Parsons falls to them. You know, I know there's been questions about, you know, does he drop because of his character stuff? I don't know. If Micah Parsons drops to you, then you've got to, you know, maybe that changes your value. You might have to run the pickup. Mm-hmm. But for me, I think it's more of a mid-round selection for them at this point than an early round.
So let's put you on the clock officially at number 18. With the board as it has fallen here in this guest mock draft series, who would you be picking if you were the Dolphins general manager?
Yeah, I definitely see the board, and I've got a few guys in my sort of small big board. Mm-hmm. And one of them is Najee Harris, Dolphins fans. But I'm not going that way. I'm going Azeez Ojulari.
Yeah. Nice.
Edge rusher out of Georgia. Getting a speed rusher on the outside. He's more of the outside linebacker, you know, guy probably for Miami. Mm-hmm. But for me, I actually think he's my favorite edge rusher in the draft. I know people might like Jalen Phillips better. I'm a little bit worried about his concussions, People might like Quiddy Pay better, who's a little bigger guy, but I like Ojulari. I think that he is a really, I think he's a complete guy, especially for his size. People say he's just kind of a speed, you know, one-dimensional guy, but I think he can hold up in the run. You know, if he adds some pass rush moves and they've got a really good coaching staff down there who I think can help him with that, then I think he's you know, he's going to be a guy who's starting for, you know, 8 to 10 years in this league for you.
He is very smart with run defense, and I don't think that he gets enough credit for that. But, you know, the bend and the flash and the speed out of his stance, I mean, that's what gets a lot of people talking. But he is a player who I think you could put out there on early down work and have a lot more confidence than he's getting credit for. Ben, what do you think about this one? This is your edge two here going off the board at 18.
Right, so this is exactly what I'm talking about. It's like it's a sort of pick that I would love to make for the Dolphins, but until this podcast, I don't have the confidence to say they would take a player of this mold, right? But like you say, like he can be a run defender. And then as Cameron brought up, they just need the guy who can win one-on-one. And when you watch that Georgia defense and they get a third and long in a key situation, they tell Ojulari, okay, put two hands in the dirt, line up as wide as you want, and go race the tackle to the quarterback. That's what they want him to do. So I love it. This is a guy that I think makes a lot of sense.
Fantastic. I mean, I think that this makes the Dolphins defense even more fun as they are continuing to build their pieces and get close to that playoff berth and hopefully a little playoff run here. All depends on what happens with Tua Tagovailoa, but Miami is certainly giving us draft fans a lot to care about here as they have a ton of picks this year and next year as well. So Chris Greer, he's definitely helping us keep the lights on with all the entertainment that he's given us from the draft side of things. Cameron Wolf, he's one of the best there is covering the Miami Dolphins. Everybody go follow him at Cameron Wolf on Twitter. Cam, my man, thank you so much for joining us.
Absolutely. Appreciate y'all.
Two more picks to round out this top 20 of our guest mock draft series. That's coming up for you tomorrow on Sunday. Until then, you guys keep it locked right here on Locked On NFL Draft.